Like so many of you, we battle depression during life's many ups and downs.
Music has always been there to help us through the tough times that we all face.
Follow us on our journey as we discuss the healing power of music.
Interview artists and bands.
Break down genres and music news.
Review artist biographies.
And much, much more.
You're listening to the When Words Fail Music Speaks Podcast.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to When Words Fail Music Speaks, the podcast where we fight depression with the power of music. I'm your handicapped host, James Cox. I have another interview today. He is a pretty well-known legend of his own right. Brian Culbertson is a jazz musician from Chicago, Illinois, I think. If not, oh, I'm sorry. Okay, all right, good. Yeah, so Brian, welcome to the show, man. How are you doing?
I'm well. Thank you, James, for having me.
Good. Yeah. So Chicago, we talked, I guess it gets pretty cold out there, huh?
Well, it can, you know, it's definitely cold now. Yeah, a lot of snow exactly. And cold.
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah, you never know. Well, yeah, like I said before, that's kind of on, it doesn't know what it wants to do. You know, one day it's cold, next day it feels like it's on fire. It never knows, you know? So, yeah, dude. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
I actually like the winter here. So, some people are like, oh, they don't like the snow, but I kind of like all the seasons. So,
My favorite is the spring and the fall. I just love the fall the best. You know, October.
Me too. Halloween. Me too.
Speaking of Halloween, you live in Illinois. Okay, so I read that you are from, correct me if I'm wrong again. Yeah. So you're from Decatur.
Yeah, so I grew up there, and that's kind of central Illinois.
Yeah,
and then I moved up to Chicago proper when I was 18. Started going to school there, and then got into the whole music scene there.
Right.
Yeah. Then for a while lived in Los Angeles. Yeah. You know, did that whole thing, and then I'm back. I kind of missed, like I just said. You know, I like the season, so we missed the season, so we moved back, and here we are.
There you go. Yeah, the reason why I'm mentioning Decatur and Halloween is because there's a guy on TikTok. I don't know if you came across it, but you probably have. Mm-hmm. Called the Michael Myers of Decatur, and he goes
really.
He dresses up Michael Myers like all year round. Apparently, just goes around and just spooks everybody.
That's news to me.
Yeah. So I was wondering if you actually saw him or saw him live by him or something. I'm not sure.
Never didn't know anything about it. I'll have to check it out now.
Yes, absolutely. So you have a new album coming out, which we're going to talk about, called Day Trip. And I listened to a few of it, and it makes me feel of, it's a soundtrack to the person's life, to me, you know.
It's just so
beautiful and so indescribable at the same time, you know.
Wow, thank you.
Yeah. So, but you started out playing piano, and
I started out piano when I was about 8 years old, traditional classical piano. Many kids, hey, you got to take piano lessons, that whole thing. And from there, I started messing around with the drum set. And then I wanted to join the fifth grade school band. So I picked up a trombone. It's very random. I just kind of gravitated towards lots of different instruments. All along, piano was kind of my main instrument that I like to use as a songwriting tool. Even though throughout school, my trombone playing was kind of my main instrument that I practiced mostly on. However, piano was my kind of writing and production tool. So over the years, I never really practiced that much on piano. It was a weird thing. I would just kind of use it to write songs.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of an odd thing when I started making my own albums. I put these records out with piano as the melody, mainly because I thought that would be more interesting than putting out a trombone album.
Right. You know, right. So, exactly. Yeah. Well, yeah. I guess you proved us right here on Windward Trail because I read jazz music. Should I talk to you now? Says that piano was their first instrument. So I guess if you really want to get into music like lifestyle, you have to do the piano first and foremost.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people do that, or, you know, the other instrument that is a great help is guitar. Yeah. You know, both guitar and piano, you can play chords and, you know, basically make a full song. Right. All other instruments are in general, you know, like a horn or whatever, you sort of need an accompaniment. Yeah. You know, if you play trumpet or sax or trombone, you need, well, where's the rest of the band? Right. But a piano, it's kind of cool. You can play a solo piano piece and it can be a complete song. So that's a beautiful thing about that particular instrument. And it allows you to... Yeah, exactly. And it allowed me as a, you know, young musician to be able to, I could also work in the computer and create all the other tracks, making my full band. So I could program the drums on the keyboard and play a bass patch or a string sound or all these different sounds. That's what kind of got me excited about making music early on when I was younger, was that it allowed me to play all these different sounds and I could create the whole orchestra in essence by myself. And I was like, whoa, what is this? Yeah. I think I was 12 years old when I kind of discovered that at somebody's home studio, and that just blew my mind.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
So with juggling all of these instruments, you know, trombone, bass, drums, and everything, and the piano, how did that shape your the composer inside you for the long haul, you know?
I mean, every instrument that you kind of learn and understand helps with the music that you're creating, I believe. You know, learning drums, I was about 9 years old. I was studying and trying to play along with some of my favorite albums of that day. And so just kind of learning how does this groove work? So understanding that, you know, later on when I'm making records now, I know what the drum should be, you know? And so it's a huge help, I think, you know, understanding how each of the instruments really work mechanically and also musically. So,
yeah. I've always wanted to ask somebody this, and I'm glad it's you, because you pretty much know the whole ins and outs of the music. I know. So is music theory as hard as people say that it is? Or is it just, or is everybody overlooking it? I mean, just.
I think it has. Yeah, I mean, you know, you can make it super complex, but I think there's a way to, you know, gradually understand it. You know, you're not going to start out immediately like with the uber complex altered chords. In the beginning, you got to kind of start. It's like baby steps. Yeah. Just like learning the instrument from scratch, theory is the same way. You got to start one chord at a time and start simple and really grasp that and then move on until you have a really you know, advanced idea of what's going on. Then you can get into the complex stuff and be like, oh, okay. And at that point you understand it because you have the foundation of everything else. So I would say, yes, it can be hard and daunting, but at the same time, if you have a good teacher or a good method, I think it can be accessible for anybody.
Yeah. Hey man, you know, I'm not going to pretend that I know music theory or understand it. Yeah. You know, I just, you know, because I hear that it's hard sometimes, and I think Victor Wooten, you know, bass player, famous bass player, explained it to the perfect amount of information, but I still couldn't. Sure. I still can follow it, so I'm not the guy if you want to in music theory, but I don't think everybody is, you know.
Yeah, I mean, most people are simply casual listeners to music and enjoy it. And you don't need to understand music theory to enjoy music. Certainly not. But if you're creating music and arranging music and writing it, it'll help.
I tell everybody that music is a universal language, you know.
Of course.
I don't know if you've heard of the Who, H-U. But they're a Mongolian band, and So I don't know anything about Mongolian music, right? But listening to the song, listening to their songs, I understand what they were about, but I didn't understand what they were saying, you know, because music has that, such a good vibe, you know.
I get it.
Is there any inspiration outside of jazz, you know, rock, pop, like Mongolian music that you that you kind of go towards to like get some newer, fresher ideas that you haven't listened to before?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly kind of listen to all kinds of things. I'm definitely not into just listening to my own music, or I mean my own genre of music, jazz. So I'm checking out kind of all genres, from classical to EDM, to the European jazz, to kind of whatever. Yeah. You never know where you're going to get inspiration from, I think. I must admit, I have not heard of Mongolian Who, yeah. That band.
Yes.
Yeah. But hey, you know, not the Who, the rock band from the 70s, from Mongolia.
Right. They spelled a name H-U, Who.
Right.
And then another band from Mongolia called the Nine Treasures.
Wow.
So that's a really good group that you need to check out.
It's cool that obviously every country has its own genres of music, and it's a beautiful thing. To know everything is impossible, but to explore and to check it out is wonderful. So I love that.
Yeah. There's I still get confused going to a music store, and I'm sure you're the same way, you know, because you see rows of like music everywhere, and like I don't know nothing about music, man. This is awesome, you know. And you go through those albums, and you're like, I want that, I want, you know. So yeah, music is very out there, you know.
Absolutely. And there's so much of it nowadays, too. You know, it's an endless scroll of new music coming out every day. And so, again, it's impossible to hear everything. But, you know, hopefully you can check out different things. And like I said, get inspired by things from around the world and in all genres.
Hey, guys, so sorry to interrupt your episode, but I figured I want to play you a song from his catalog that you may not have heard yet. This one is called Morning Walk, and it's from his 2019 album, Winter Stories. Enjoy. Thank you.
Right. So you write, you arrange, you perform, and produce. You do a lot, okay? So which role of those that I just mentioned makes you feel more at home, and which one pushes you outside your comfort zone the most?
Ooh, I would say producing. I feel the most comfortable when I'm in the studio, which I am now, working on a track, a new song, when I'm producing it and trying to make it sound like a record. That to me is exciting because you're literally creating something out of nothing. And when you get done, hey, here's a brand new song, a whole new production. Check it out. I mean, that's like incredible to me. So I've always gotten excited about making a new song. So that really is all about the production, because a lot of times the songwriting will happen fast. That's quick in the beginning. But producing the song so that it sounds like a record, that's a long process in general for me, you know, adding each part, layering things, and then the edit process, and then the mixing and mastering. I mean, there's so many parts of making a record, so I really enjoy the whole process.
Yeah, editing, man. I mean, I can't imagine what you have to go through to edit your song, but it takes me a while to edit these episodes. So I feel for you, man. I feel strongly for you, brother. You know. But
I must admit, there's definitely times in the middle of a production where you can get discouraged and be like, oh man, it's not coming out how I was wanting it. But you just kind of have to persevere and get through those rough patches. And then, oh, all of a sudden you're like, ooh, you do one thing. You're like, ooh, okay. Now it's getting better. Oh, now it's coming out and becoming something really cool again. So, you know, I kind of go through that with every album I'm working on. It's like, ooh, I don't like it right now. Right. I got to work on it.
We're all perfectionists in the media, you know, and I'm thinking that's kind of hard with like a downfall, kind of, you know, because we wanted to be so good for people. We were like, and this is not ready to release it. And then 14 years go by, and it's like, it's still not ready, you know? So, oh my God, dude, you got to release it somehow, you know? So, okay. So,
what's the famous quote? You never finish art, you just have to abandon it.
Yes.
Eventually.
Exactly. That is true. Yes. So,
well, let it go.
Yeah, you just got to put it out there and see what the fans want, you know? So, all right.
Yeah.
So we learned that producing is your home, is where you want to be, but which one pushes you outside your comfort zone the most? You know, what's the opposite?
Probably. Yeah, the opposite is probably when I'm trying to maybe play something on the piano that I hear in my head that may be even more difficult than I can even physically play. That gets frustrating to me. It's like, so sometimes I'll hear a part, but it's maybe so crazy and outlandish, I can't actually play it.
Right.
Because I'm not the greatest piano player in the world, right?
Oh, there's on. Some. I think you're great. Go on.
Well, I can play how I play, and that's cool. Right. But sometimes I'll want to push myself as the producer. I want to push the artist, piano player, myself, past what I can even do. And sometimes that definitely takes me out of my comfort zone. So I have to practice and try it and try it and try it until I finally get it.
Right.
You know? Yeah. So like I said earlier, you know, when I was younger, piano wasn't my main instrument. It was my secondary instrument. And trombone, I find easier to record and play. Just because that was my main, you know, horn or my main instrument for so many years. Of course, I've gotten comfortable on the piano and I have a style and a thing. I'm not trying to say I'm no good. I feel that, and I think this is important, to keep pushing yourself to get better. Yes. Right.
Yes.
You know, you can never know everything. You don't know all the licks.
No.
Even I'm always trying to learn something.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to learn a Herbie Hancock song this month. Have you ever heard 4 a.m. by Herbie Hancock? It's unbelievable. And so I'm going to try to learn that. Yeah. But that's definitely going to push me past my comfort zone.
Yeah.
But it's exciting, though.
Yeah. So let's talk about your idols, I guess, and your inspirations. Okay, so you came out and you started doing music in the 94.
Yeah.
God, now that I say that, I was 14. I'm 45 years old right now. So
there
you're dating
go.
Me, man. You're dating me, you know, way back when. But that's all good.
Yeah.
I love you anyway. So Earth, Wind, and Fire, I read, is one of your major influences, along with Power.
Sure.
Yeah.
I kind of had two sides of influences, the jazz fusion side. So like the David Sanborn, the Brecker Brothers, Chick Corea, Yellow Jackets, Jeff Lorber, that kind of, George Duke, Herbie, that kind of scene, as well as the funk horn bands of the 70s. So Earth, Wind, and Fire, Tower Power, even the band Chicago is in there, was a big influence. All those pop funk bands that had horn sections. I really like that.
Anybody also, you know, they had that in. And I guess
the Stray Cats
did it, right? The Stray Cats or
something. Did they?
They were like a big band production, you know.
That's true.
You know, it doesn't matter what it is, they had it in the band, you know. So, between artists like Earth, Wind, and Fire and Tower Power and jazz fusion groups.
Yeah.
What's a part of your musical DNA do you think that people get wrong or it's like overlooked some?
I guess if you listen to my music, you'll definitely hear influences from both of those sides. But at this point, I've listened to so much other things that there's all kinds of influences coming in. If you listen to the trilogy, there's a lot of, there's a lot of ambient sound effects going on. So that's clearly a different influence, right?
Right.
If you listen to Colors of Love album, I was listening to a lot of dark hip hop during that time.
Okay, yeah.
Isn't that crazy? So if you take the piano off of those mixes and put a rapper on top, it could have worked over those tracks that I was making. However, the piano on top totally changed the vibe and the flavor of it. I'm getting influence from all over the place.
Everywhere.
You just never know, yeah.
I mean, hell, you might listen to the Who, H.U., and get information from them, you know?
All right, I'm going to do that tonight.
Good, yes, sir. Yeah, because I love telling people about music that they never heard of. I love getting information, you know, because I'm always looking for the next musical access, you know, and some I don't like very much, but mostly I do. I just love it. I'm not a big fan of rap anymore. I used to be back in the 90s, but it's like, that's not for me anymore, you know.
I get it. There's a lot of it right now. It's kind of sounding similar.
Yeah,
and it sounds like a little bit.
Yeah.
Seems like everyone's kind of copying each other. It's like, okay, well. That's why I think, you know, it's important to stay kind of true to who you are as an artist and be authentic and not chase trends. I see too many other artists kind of trying to sound like this person and that person, mainly because they were popular. It doesn't mean you're going to be popular if you copy it, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
that's true. That's
I think
true.
You got to trailblaze yourself in whatever genre you're trying to do. And then, you know, See what happens. People will dig it or not.
Yeah. I want to talk to Dallin about you playing live, because I'm sure your show is awesome, and I've never seen you live before, which I am going to go see you live when you come down here. Probably, I don't know. Oh. Maybe I'll come up there, when I get super famous or something. But so when you write songs, do you have a live audience in mind, like this section right here will get them on their seats and start rocking with me? Or do you kind of
most of the time I'm just thinking of what is this song asking for in the moment, and then later on I will figure out, okay, how do we translate this album version to the stage? And many times I will, when we're rehearsing with the band, I'm like, okay, this sounds, it's too boring in a live setting, so we need to add some excitement or some hits or stops or like elevate certain sections of a song to really come off and, like you said, get people out of their seats. Yeah. We definitely think about that a lot when we're in rehearsals.
Right.
I would say less so when I'm making the record.
Okay.
Now, certain songs we'll know immediately, like, oh, this was going to hit hard live. Some are obvious, but others are like, well, you know what? I'm just trying to create a mood and a vibe here, and we'll see how it maybe translates to the live show later. And some songs just don't work that great live, and so we don't put them in the set. And others are obvious, like I said. So it just depends on what kind of vibe the song is.
Right. Yeah, totally, that's a very strange and awesome thing. You know, it's kind of like what they respond to, but I'm not writing it for them right now. Maybe I'll write for it later and figure something out.
Exactly. And sometimes this is weird, we'll be rehearsing something and we're in that rehearsal studio bubble, to where we think, oh, this is going to be amazing. And then we play our first show. I was like, oh, I guess not.
Right, exactly. You know,
so I'll call a rehearsal. Yeah. The very next day, I'm like, at the next venue, I'm like, okay, we got to fix this song or whatever. Yeah. So, you never know how an audience is going to react until you just get out there and start playing it live. So,
is it just like if they don't respond to that, verse or chorus, you talked about fixing it, right? So would that fix be like one more note or one more line in the verse, or how do you fix that?
It depends. I mean, there's various things that you can do to make a section, let's say, more exciting.
Right.
So maybe I'll talk to my drummer. I'll say, hey, Chris, who's my drummer, hey, on this section, instead of just kind of keeping this straight beat, why don't you hype it up and, add some extra flair on your hi-hat? And so instead of doom, doom, ta, doom, why don't you go, there's something, everything from that to, hey, the guitar player, I'll be like, okay, instead of playing the chord low, maybe go up high and go, instead of bling, bling.
Four notes, right?
So there's all these little things that you can do. So each player has to kind of heighten it up.
Right, right. I want to go back real fast about rewriting songs too. Is when you're in the middle of writing one song, because I know words from your mind are emotional to you, as well as many other musicians. Does certain songs that you are writing feel like they don't they don't need to be written yet? You know what I'm saying? Do certain songs they writing feels differently from the ones that you put on your studio record?
I mean, every song is kind of a different writing process. I don't have like one set way that I write.
Yeah.
And I think I mean, number one, you never know where inspiration is going to hit.
Right.
So a lot of times when I'm in the writing mode of making a new record, I just kind of, I start writing and see how the flow goes. And some songs are quick. Sometimes songs are like, oh my God, this is taking forever. And I spend literally a year and on. You know, I'll start a song and I'm like, ah, I don't know yet. And then 2 months later, I'll kind of come back to it. Oh, that was kind of a cool idea. Let me add the next section to it. And then I'll get stuck again. So you just never know.
Yeah.
However, the songs on the new album,
Day Trip,
they all happened insanely fast.
Oh, nice.
For instance, we wrote, me and Nicholas Cole, who wrote 9 of the songs out of the 11, wrote all 9 songs in 4 days.
Yeah. 4 days?
4 days. Yeah. Literally 2 songs per day.
Right. Yeah.
It was nuts. I'd never written that quickly before, so... Again, you just don't know what's going to happen. And so I just kind of go with what I'm feeling. If it's feeling good, keep it going.
You're right, yeah.
If I'm not feeling it, take a break.
Yeah.
So
how is your emotional connection to the songs, albums?
Yeah.
From writing in 4 days to, say, like 2 years to make? I mean, is there like a vast emotional connection between those two albums?
Wow. I would say the excitement level of the songs that happened quickly was really like, whoa, this is amazing energy, synergy. Yeah. This is awesome.
Yeah.
Other songs are like, oh my goodness gracious, this is like, I'm belaboring the song. Should I even finish it? I don't know.
Yeah.
But in all honesty, most songs are kind of in between.
Okay.
For me. Well,
I guess they're all your babies, and you can't pick one to, you know.
Not necessarily. Like, no. It's like, I like them all.
All right. Exactly. Going on your website, it's BrianCulbertson.com for anybody who wants to visit the site. You have wine. And I am curious about what it is and how you make it and come up with your idea. Because I'm trying to get more into stuff, you know. I tried whiskey. Whiskey's too kind of punching for me, kind of rough.
Too much.
Yes. So I want to get into wine a little bit because they say like one cup of wine is great for the heart.
And that's true.
And I just want to know all about this because this is called Brian Cumberson's Wine Club.
Yeah. So years ago, I got into wine. And, you know, when most people are younger, you don't know what to order. And you're like, okay, well, let me just get a red wine because you don't know. Right. Eventually, maybe a friend or, you know, my wife actually spent a lot of time in Italy. So when she came back from one of her trips, she's like, ooh, hey, let's try some of this wine. I had this over there. And I was like, oh, this is really good. This other friend of mine, I was out to dinner once. He was like, hey, if you had this, I was like, no, I don't know anything about it. And so slowly you'll get introduced to really good wine.
Right.
And you realize, or at least for me, I realize immediately there's a huge difference in quality between just getting a regular whatever red wine at a restaurant and knowing what you're picking and like, ooh, this is something. They always say there's, you know, the one glass of wine that got you hooked.
Yes.
You'll remember your first.
Exactly.
Yes. So from that time on, you know, I've definitely delved deeper and deeper into it. And then my wife and I took a trip to Napa Valley for one of our anniversaries, and we spent about 10 days up there, really got deeper and deeper into wine, of course, in Napa Valley. That's the best wine in the U.S. So from there, I started meeting a lot of the different winery owners and people that worked around the valley, just kept in touch with everybody. And that's kind of how I started the jazz festival out there, the Napa Valley Jazz Getaway.
Yes.
And so from there, I wanted to start getting into wine making. And so the way that I do it is I work with winemakers. I'm not planting grapes myself, you know. I'm no farmer, I'll tell you that much. But I like to work with winemakers who can source great grapes from different regions, mostly around Napa. And also I'll go in and work with them on the blending process of blending. What you do is you take raw wine from one particular little plot of land, and then you'll have a bunch of different wines that are created from different areas. And so even though it could be all, let's say, Cabernet Sauvignon, right? It's each different plot of land tastes very differently depending on what the soil is and what the temperate climate is in that particular little tiny area. So working with a winemaker, you learn, okay, we'll do different blends of this and then create your signature blend. And that's what I've gotten to do a lot. And so that's what most of my wines are blends of different grapes from different little regions around California. So that's been a lot of fun.
Well, I'm definitely going to order one, you know, because I'm really wanting to start going, but not going to wine tasting, because I don't know. I'm not very, But here, hearing just what you said, you know, encouraged me to like expand, you know, my notion.
That's awesome.
Because I've had white wine, I had red wine, and they're either very tart or very, very sweet. And it's not the perfect, you know.
Right. So, yeah, you got to get a good, like I said, blend.
Right.
I don't like either one of your description. I don't want a tart one or a sweet one.
I gotta try yours because yours sounds pretty awesome here. So
okay.
So you mentioned the Napa Valley Jazz Getaway. And
sure.
You co-created it and co-owned it with your wife.
Yeah. Okay. So I kind of came up with this concept. And so every morning we're having breakfast together and, we're just talking about it and, you know, just kind of brainstorming all these different ideas. And that ended up being year one. And so now we're in year 13. I can't believe it. It's been many, many years. And it's grown into a really cool event where people literally fly in from all over the world to have wine and see the concerts. So it's really a lot of fun.
Nice. And and that's going to be in which will be
it's second week of June every year.
Yes, because that's okay. Yeah, because I want to get it out there for everybody to come to the, you know, I think it's so great that you have a place where people can come, enjoy, relax.
Yeah.
And I mean, nothing's more powerful than music,
absolutely.
And the friendships, like I want to say a lot of friendships are made at your, you know, getaway. So
absolutely. I mean, you'll see the same people come back year after year after year. And they're like, hey, I remember you from, you know, and so a lot of people meet and then they end up keeping in touch throughout the rest of the year. So that's beautiful. Nice. Yeah.
I got a few more questions for you, but I do thank you for coming on the show.
Oh man.
For talking with me today. Pleasure. This is awesome. Yeah. So let's see here. Okay, so hidden musical quirks. Okay. What is a quirky musical habit or superstition that you have in the studio that fans probably would not ever guess?
I mean, wow.
There's like a ghost in the closet that helps you play better, or, you know, just weird superstition like that, you know?
That is an interesting question. I got to think about that one.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
We can make one
on the spot, you know, and that'd be like a legend. What? Or something.
Well, now I'm curious. What do other people say?
I don't know. that's my first. I just asked you first. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. You got me thinking here. I'm not necessarily a superstitious person, so. Yeah. I don't have any like rituals that I have to do. You know, some people are like, what do you have to do before a show to get ready? No, and I'm like, yeah. I don't know.
I just do
take
I
a
do,
shower man. And get dressed.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm I'm not like, I don't have anything weird like that.
Yeah. I'll tell you what.
Maybe I should. I don't know.
Come back in a few months and we'll see what, yeah, where you're at on that one. Yeah. So
there you go.
Conjure a ghost or something to help you rate better. I don't know. Nice. I'm just playing stupid thing. You know? Okay. So, music is everywhere and you're always listening as well as, you know, fans and stuff. Has there ever been like a pedal or a plugin that you software that really inspired like an entire song out of nowhere just by one?
Oh, sure.
One sound.
Yeah, you know? Technology is played a huge part in a lot of my albums. Most recently, I'm going to go to the trilogy, to where I was using this plugin called Arcade, and it's made by the company Output. So if you go to Output Arcade, it's a loops based plugin, and I was live streaming. So I live stream a show called The Hang on YouTube. And while I was live streaming one night, I decided to write a new song from scratch. So I ended up writing this whole song in 1 hour while I was live streaming, and people were listening while I was making it. But it all started from this guitar loop that I was scrolling around in this program, Output Arcade, and I came across this sound. All it was ding a 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 ding a.
That's it. Yeah.
I just played it, and I was like, this whole song hit.
There was something.
And the song ended up being, it's called Sandcastles. So you can look that up. That's on the trilogy part 3. And so that
white one, correct?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So listen to that song. It starts with that guitar loop. I didn't use the sample that was on there. I went back and, you know, recorded with real guitar player, and you know, we did the whole thing. However, you'll understand what I was saying based on checking that out.
Oh yeah, technology's wild, so, you know.
It is, and that's just one example of a ton. Yeah. A lot of times, I'll just scroll through different sounds, not even a loop, and a particular keyboard sound like ding.
Yeah,
a song will kind of come out of that.
More, yeah.
So, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. Three more questions, and then we'll let you go. So, back in. I stated that you started in 94, right?
Yeah.
I was 14. I don't know how old you were because you look kind of young. You look
21. I had just turned 21.
Okay.
Right when the album came out. So they didn't think I was old enough.
Right. So
I was really young.
Right. So let's go back to, we'll say you're 14, 15, right? We're looking around your bedroom. At the walls.
Okay.
Are you looking at any musical posters? And if so, who and what are we looking at?
Believe it or not, the posters I had when I was younger were more car posters. Okay. I was into like sports cars. So I had a, you know, a Porsche, a Lamborghini, Ferraris, and all that kind of stuff. You know, so I was definitely had those posters. I did not have any band posters or music posters. Not even one.
Yeah.
Totally lame. I know. It's weird, huh?
Right. Well, I mean, you know, but I don't think I've had any music posters. I've had, I don't know if I had. Oh, I had Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles posters, you know, because I was a big back in the day.
So there you go. Awesome. I had a little music room set up in the basement when I was young, and I did have posters of jazz festivals.
Yes. Okay.
So, for instance, the North Sea Jazz Festival, the Montreux Jazz Festival. These are like really big European jazz festivals that when I was younger, I had the opportunity to go to. Yeah. So I had a couple of those posters up. That was kind of cool.
Nice.
So there you go.
Okay, so the next question, you're probably going to hate me. I don't know if you will or not, but we'll see. Four of your... Okay, so your big four, you can pick four bands, artists, albums, we'll do albums.
Okay.
You only got four, we're going to do like a Mount Rushmore of music. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Who are they?
Wow. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
So if I could only... Let's say I could only listen to four artists forever.
Right.
I got to pick Miles Davis as one. Mm-hmm. David Sanborn.
Okay.
Ooh.
Tough.
Two more.
Yeah. Two more.
I mean, I'm putting Earth, Wind, and Fire in there.
We got to. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're
and great. Yeah. Number four. Oh, wow. Okay, I'm gonna go Sting.
Sting.
Okay. Because of his immense catalog of all kinds of different genres and music from, you know, the Police all the way through his contemporary stuff. So I was way into his early solo albums because it was more jazz fusion leaning.
Right.
That's when I really first got into, let's say, Branford Marsalis. Was because he was playing with Sting back in the 80s.
Yeah.
And I loved how he took that jazz approach and mixed it with the funky pop sound.
Yeah.
So, you know, that obviously another big influence to me.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Hardest question yet. Okay.
Okay.
One song, album, or artist that you can listen to right now, but you can't tell me, your wife, or anybody else how it makes you feel deep inside your soul. What would that be?
Wow.
Like when you listen to a song, it's so emotionally connection. You cannot tell me anything that you are feeling right then and there.
Ooh, that is a hard question.
Or do you even have one? Because I've spoken to a lot of musicians, and some of them don't have one at all, you know?
I mean, I definitely, there is music out there that is pretty heavy emotionally.
Yeah.
I mean, one that comes to mind is a Bonnie Raitt song, I Can't Make You Love Me.
Yes. Perfect song.
Bruce Hornsby was playing piano and Hammond B3 organ on that song. Oh, that song always blew me away emotionally.
Right.
So that's a song. I mean, I could probably come up with a lot of different songs now, but that was the first one that came to mind.
That's perfect. You know, there's some songs, not a lot of songs that I listen to, but I just bring down the kite for some reason. I don't know why it just happened.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm sure that's cool. That song does that to you. So,
Listen to it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So let's give you some shout outs before we leave you. You can go to BrianCulbertson.com and you can download his Day Trip album right now. It's streaming on all platforms, Spotify.
Everywhere.
I don't really like Spotify anymore. You know, they're kind of dragging everybody down, but Apple Music.
I've been using Tidal. I've been using Tidal personally.
Tidal.
So it's high definition and they're more artist friendly. So, you know, I like that.
And I think it's like a Jay-Z creation.
I think he's he didn't create it. He's a he's a co-owner of some sort. I don't know what his percentage is.
Right.
I know he was he bought it early on with several other artists. So that's why it's more artist centric,
which is perfect. You know,
it is great.
I really despise Spotify for some odd reason. They don't pay hardly anything anymore. So
They're the lowest, I believe, of all the streaming.
Apple Music pays a lot more than them, which is kind of, well, it makes sense because Apple was everywhere, you know.
And Tidal is like even 10 times more than Apple. It's crazy.
Really?
So,
I got to dive deep into Tidal now. So,
there you go.
You are on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, and X.
Yes.
Twitter.
Yes.
X. So are we on TikTok yet?
You know what? I'm not. I didn't get on it.
I'm still trying to figure it out.
It was like, you know, how many things do we have to do? You know, it's like eventually you're like, oh, geez, it's too much. I got to make music, not be on.
Right. Yeah. And
online. I don't know.
And I mean, you're on it for the big dogs already. So that's for you, you know? So.
YouTube is my main one for, you know, streaming my show, obviously. And then to, you know, the other ones, I just kind of put out what I'm up to, in the moment.
Yeah.
So,
and your show on YouTube is called The Hang, correct?
Yes. Oh, yeah. And that was created in 2020 when all the concerts were canceled. I was like, well, I got to do something.
Yeah, I created this podcast because of COVID. So thank you, there COVID. You go. I guess I would thank him. Thank the virus, or I'm not sure. I don't know. I don't know what I'm talking about, but it's okay. So,
but hey, we're still both doing our thing, and that's a cool byproduct. So absolutely. I'm thankful for that. So,
I love you like a brother, dude, and I welcome you to come back anytime you want to.
Oh man, you know, thank you so much.
In the future, you never know. You know. So
exactly.
All right, cool.
Very good. All right. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yes, sir.
All right.
And with that said, everybody, I want to thank you for listening to the episode of the day. And always remember, when words fail, music speaks. Bye, guys.